So we've been talking about vision for the last few weeks. We've been talking about having vision in our lives, and vision is simple. It's a clear picture of the future. It's a picture of where you're headed. It's a picture of what could be and should be in light of what is. So where you're headed, what you're a part of, what you want your life to look like a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, And when you have that kind of vision in your life, it kind of gives a new sense of purpose and meaning and passion to everything you do. Now, we're not talking about the kind of vision where you say, a year from now, I want to be driving a Beamer, or I want to be driving a Hummer, or, you know, fill in your dream car, or whatever kind of car you wish you could be driving. We're not talking about that kind of vision. Or where you say, you know, 2 years from now, I want to be married, and I'm going to make it happen, you know, whatever it takes. Or I want my family to look like this, or I want this kind of job, or I want to win this kind of award, or I want to be CEO of the company by this time in, you know, however many years. It's not that those are bad visions. It's not that those are bad ideas or bad dreams to have, but there's this sense that when you become a follower of Jesus, and honestly, we're all in some form or fashion followers of Jesus here today, right? I mean, we wouldn't be here if we didn't believe there was something about this guy, what he said or what he did a long time ago that was worth following. And we might be all at different stages of what we believe about that and where we are in that journey of faith. And yet we're all here because we think there was something about this guy and what he said and what he did that's worth following. And when you became a follower of Jesus, and when I became a follower of Jesus, it's almost like we gave up our right to have our own dreams and our own visions apart from his dreams and his visions in our lives. And so everything we dream and vision, it fits into what he dreamed and visioned for our lives and for this world. Because he looked at his followers, and before he left, he didn't say this. He didn't say, hey, go and be happy in life. Or go and make lots of money in life. Or go and have a successful career in life. Or go and have lots of amazing, you know, Colorado adventures in life. He said, go and make disciples. Go and help other people become followers of me the way you're a follower of me. Go and lead other people into a growing relationship with me. And yeah, you might have a successful career while you're doing that, and you might make money while you're doing that. You might have some amazing adventures. You might not, but that's not the point. The point is, I've got a huge, big dream and vision for this world, and you're going to find the most purpose and the most passion and the most fulfillment in life when your dreams and your visions line up with mine. And so that's what we've been talking about. Now, some of you have said these last couple weeks where we've introduced this idea of vision and kind of the thing has been pray that God would help us to see the world and other people. If that's his vision and dream for the world, help us to see the world and other people the way you see them. Some of you have said, this has just been confirming. I feel like God gave me a vision for my life, you know, several years ago. Or God said, here's what I want you to, you know, do in the next season of your life. And this has just been revisiting that, and I realize it's just confirmed some of those things, and it's kind of gotten me excited about some of those things. I've been kind of lost along the way. Some of you have said that. Others have said, I haven't really gotten anything yet. I want that, but I just don't feel like there's anything crystal clear, to which I'd say, well, just keep praying. That's why we're doing this whole series for 10 weeks. So you've got 10 weeks to figure out your whole life. But just keep praying and keep asking God. Some of you have said, you know, I feel like I've got this vision, but I've hit so many barriers and walls along the way. In fact, I was talking with one guy last week who said, I just feel like I think I know what God wants me to do, and I think I've got this understanding of what, you know, is supposed to happen in my life and where I want to go and what he wants to do through me. But I keep hitting these barriers and these walls and these obstacles. And it's made me question, like, is this what I'm supposed to do? Is this? Well, guess what? Nehemiah hit those as well. And that's who we've been looking at. We've been looking at this guy named Nehemiah, who had this amazing vision from God. And the vision was, he was living in Persia, and we won't go through all the history, but he was living in Persia, and the vision was to travel back to Jerusalem. I say back, he had probably never even been to Jerusalem. He lived in Persia his whole life. Jerusalem was in rubbles and ruins. It had been destroyed 150 years before by the Babylonians, and just a few people lived there. And when he heard this news that the city was still in ruins, and it was a disgrace, and the walls still hadn't been rebuilt around the city, and that was a big deal back then, He had this, it's like God birthed this vision inside of him. I want you to go back and help rebuild the city and the walls. And so God gave him the what, like here's the vision, but God didn't necessarily give him the how, because God, we said last week, rarely gives the how when he gives the what. We have to trust him with the how. And so Nehemiah trusted him, and there was this amazing story where he actually went before the king of Persia, who Nehemiah worked for, and the king said, that sounds great, going back to Jerusalem. How can I help you do what you want to do? And the story kind of ended on this high note, and it's like, yeah, that's amazing. Well, look at what happens very next in the story. I want to pick up where we left off last week. This is what it says in Nehemiah chapter 10, or chapter 2, verse 10. Right after Nehemiah leaves to go back to Jerusalem, it says, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. So right here in the beginning, Nehemiah has traveled back. He's hardly done anything, and there's already critics. There's already opposition. There's already a couple of guys saying, we don't like what you're coming to do. There's like resistance and opposition right here. So if you felt that in your life, if you're maybe feeling that right now, or you felt that in the past, don't worry. That's the way all visions are. And we're actually going to read more stories in a couple of weeks where these two guys get together with some others and they really raise a stink about what's going on. And there's significant opposition in front of Nehemiah. And he's got to figure out, how do I deal with this? So if you're facing that right now, if it's raising all kinds of questions in your life, hang in there. Hang in there, because that's what happens with vision in our lives. Now, this week, we're going to look at a crucial step in the process before we get there. A crucial step between God birthing a vision, giving you an idea in your life, and actually living it out and doing something about it. So let's see what happens in the very next part of the story. Go into the next verse, and we'll read a few verses at a time here. Verse 11, this is what happens. It says, and this is Nehemiah's like memoirs or his journal. He says, I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one that I was riding on. By night, I went through the valley gate toward the Jackal Well. And he gives us this tour almost of Jerusalem. And I thought about putting a map up here and showing you all kinds of cool stuff, but you would get bored really quick. So just track with what he's saying here. He says, by night, I went through the valley gate toward the Jackal Well and the Dung Gate. Interesting. Examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broken down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. And then I moved on toward the Fountain Gate and the King's Pool. And archaeologists have found all of these places. So this is just a historical account of what he's doing. But there was not enough room for my mount to get through. So the rubble and the ruins were so bad, he had to get off his horse. So I went up to the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back and I re-entered. He retraces his steps and I re-entered through the valley gate. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or the nobles or the officials or any others who would be doing the work. Now, this is interesting what Nehemiah does when he first shows up in Jerusalem. Now, let's go back to the very beginning of this passage and look, let's just read through this one verse at the very beginning again. He says, I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others, and I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. And later he says, you know, I had said nothing to anyone. So he goes, for 3 days he's there. He doesn't tell anyone he's showed up, except for his few friends that are with him. He doesn't tell anyone he's arrived. And then he starts walking along the ruined rubble walls at night. And he's kind of asking this question, like, what is he waiting for? Why all the secrecy? Why didn't he tell anyone? Why did he just show up? And why is he walking around inspecting things at night? And I think this is so, so important, because Nehemiah realizes something that's It's so crucial to this whole idea of vision. I want to give you kind of two ideas this morning to explain what's going on in this whole passage. But the first is this. I think this is what Nehemiah is teaching us. He's teaching us that the fragile seeds of vision require the fruitful soil of confirmation. That the fragile seeds of vision require the fruitful soil of confirmation. You see, Nehemiah realized before he could live out this vision that he felt God had put in his heart, he needed to give God some space. And he needed to give God some time. He needed to give God almost some soil to work in his heart and his mind and get everything super crystal clear what was going to happen. Because whenever God bursts a vision in us, we need to give it some time and some space to allow God to refine the vision, to clarify the vision, to confirm the vision, to focus the vision. Oftentimes we've got all these ideas and God needs to get in there and focus it with us to help us understand what are the true needs. How is this actually going to work itself out? And so this period, these few days where Nehemiah shows up, he doesn't tell a soul and then he's walking the walls at night. It's like this is the space that he's giving God to confirm what's actually going on in his heart. And it's just like a seed. I mean, some of you are gardeners. Some of you know how this works. If you ever plant a plant or a flower or vegetable or seed, you know you have to put it in good soil. And nothing really happens. You just sit there and stare at it for a few days, you know? And yet, if it's going to grow, if it's going to thrive, if it's going to live, if it's going to survive, it's got to be in good, nutritious, fruitful, fruit-bearing soil. And that's what this period of time was for Nehemiah. Now, this is hard for me, because if I was Nehemiah, I think I would have done this differently. I think I would have showed up and I would have made sure everyone saw the soldiers that were with me and the cavalry from the king of Persia. Like, I would have made a big show of it. Like, I am coming with the authority of the king of Persia. Gather around and check out my posse, you know? And then I would have gotten all the political officials, all the nobles, and I would have gotten them and I would have told them what we're going to do. I'd have made sure they're on my side. I would have gotten all the priests and the religious leaders, because they're the people that interacted with the people, you know, every day at the temple and doing sacrifice. I would have made sure they understood. And then I would have called all the people as fast as I could, probably on day one, and said, hey, I've shown up. I've come from the king of Persia, and here's what we're going to do. Everyone get in line. Here's what's going to happen. That's what I would have done. And yeah, that's not what Nehemiah did. He showed up and he didn't tell a soul. He snuck around Jerusalem at night. He's measuring the walls. He's got his like tape measure out there. He's looking at things. He's trying to assess. He's figuring out, how much is this going to cost? What's it going to take? Are the walls really as bad as I heard? Because I heard the report that the walls were in ruins. And oh yeah, they're pretty bad. Maybe worse than I even thought. He's working all of this out. He's allowing God to confirm and clarify this vision in his heart and in his mind. And that is so important for all of us, because if God is birthing a vision in you, you've got to give him that space to allow him to confirm it and clarify it, to make sure that you're not charging off and doing something on your own. To make sure that you're not going to start something that you can't really finish. Some of us are good at that, right? To make sure you really do understand what the needs are. To make sure that you're not just charging out on emotion and adrenaline. Because some of us can do that. Like, we're really good at getting all pumped up and excited and seeing a vision for something and just charging out on emotion and adrenaline. And we'll do it and we'll launch in and we'll say, here's what we're going to do and here's how it's going to be. And a few weeks, a few months later, it's like everything falls apart. It's a total failure. And then we're asking the question, like, was I doing the right thing? I mean, was it not a vision from you, God? Because it ended up being a total failure. And maybe the vision was the right vision. We just didn't go about it God's way. We went about it our way. And there's a huge difference between going about things our way and God's way. I put together this little chart I want to put up on screen. I like charts. They help me think through things. But here's the difference between our way and God's way. Our way is to begin with activity and end with prayer when things don't work, right? Like, you just charge out and do things, and then when things fall apart, it's like, oh God, help me out. What happened here? And we pray. God's way is to begin with prayer and then follow it up with divinely guided activity. Our way is to have a quick start. God's way is to have a slow start. This is why I hate gardening. Like, it's always a slow start. Like, it's horrible. You plant it and you're like, okay, do something. Like, where's the tomatoes? Like, where's the cucumber? I'm ready for a salad now, you know? And you have to like sit there and wait, and it's so slow and nothing happens. But that's more often than not God's way. Our way starts out exciting and it becomes frustrating. God's way usually starts out frustrating and then it becomes exciting. So if you're in the beginning of something and it's frustrating right now, it's probably God's way. Our way is to charge out, to overcome, and in the end, to get overwhelmed. God's way is usually for us to start out overwhelmed and then to step back and watch Him overcome. And I think Nehemiah embraces this. I think he goes about this vision God's way because he knows the minute he goes public, the minute he shows up and says, hey, here's what I think we should do, he's going to have all kinds of opposition. He's going to have all kinds of questions. He's going to have doubters. He's going to have critics. He's going to have people saying, are you sure? Do you really think? How are we going to pay for this? How are we going to make this happen? Where are we going to get the materials from? Who's going to do the work? You expect us to leave our jobs and do this? Are you going to do the work? What about Sanballat and his folks? They don't like this. Maybe they're right. Maybe we shouldn't do it. I mean, he knows the minute he goes public, he's going to get all kinds of questions. And he realizes this is a critical moment. It's a critical juncture. And he's got to give time. He's got to give space. He's got to give God a period where God can clarify and refine and focus and confirm the vision in his heart and his mind before he does anything about it. Now, before we read a little bit more in the story, I wanted to stop at this point and give you a couple of tips, like just a couple of practical suggestions related to this. So number one is this: if God is birthing a vision inside of you, don't tell anyone until God clarifies and confirms it. Give it some time. Dwell on it. Think about it. Pray about it. Investigate it. Research it. Google it. You know, whatever. But just give it some time. Walk the walls. Take out your tape measure. Figure out what's really going on. Ask God to confirm and clarify what you think He's telling you. Now, you might bring one or two trusted people into that process. But for the most part, I think you need to let God speak in these early moments of Him birthing vision in your life. And when He does that, and when you feel like He's confirming, and when you feel like He's clarifying, you feel like there's some signs of that confirmation, then you move forward and you trust Him. But try to give Him some space to do that. Second tip, practical tip: if a close friend begins to dream out loud with you, provide him or her with a place of encouragement and not criticism. Because you're going to have friends that do this all the time. You're going to have friends that start thinking out loud, and they're going to share with you their very unconfirmed, unclarified, unthought through dreams. And if you're anything like me, you're going to be really practical and pragmatic in those moments, and you're going to ask all kinds of questions and say all kinds of things and bring up all the reasons why this is the craziest thing you've ever heard in your life. But in those moments, you cannot do that. You've got to just stop and say, wow, that's an amazing vision. Wow. Like, don't say how, say wow, like, wow. Keep thinking about that. Yeah. One time, I was talking with three close friends. This is a while back, 15 years ago. Scott, Mike, and Mike. And I remember the conversation to this day. And we were all kind of dreaming and sharing and just hanging out. We played basketball and we were hanging out after that. And I remember my friend Scott shared one of his dreams with us. And his dream was to drive from the southern tip of South America to the northern tip of North America. And if you know my friend Scott, like, this totally fits him. He loves to drive, and it was like this cool adventure. And that was like one of his dreams in life, to take a year to do this. And I was going through one of my sort of self-righteous phases in life. Kind of still in that self-righteous phase, probably. But I remember looking back at him and saying, well, that's cool, Scott, but like, what eternal value is there to that? And I remember he looked back and he said, "Hey, dude, crush your own dreams, but don't crush mine." And the truth is, that was probably the last time Scott ever shared any dreams with me. Because here's the deal, our close friendships, our families, especially our marriages with our spouses, they've got to be safe places where we can dream dreams and we can have visions. And yeah, we're going to have some really bad dreams and some really crazy visions at times. And in those moments, you've just got to stop and hold it in and be like, you know what? If it's a bad dream and a bad vision, it won't happen. You know, if it's not from God, it's not going to be lived out. And maybe down the road, if God says, hey, it's time to step in and tell him, you know, like, this is crazy, what are you doing? Maybe if you really feel like God's doing that down the road, that's one thing. But at this point, let the people closest to you dream out loud. They need a place where they can be encouraged and not criticized. They need a place where they can just talk out loud. Because visions are fragile. They're like fragile seeds in the beginning. And we need to have friends who can share those fragile seeds with us. And if we'll have friends that are like that, then we'll share those with them. And as we go through those periods and processes of confirmation and clarification in our lives, as we allow God to speak to us and say, yeah, this is something, and here's the needs, and here's what you need to do. Here's that. Only when we've gone through that, it might be days, it might be months, it might be years, but only when we've gone through that can then we say, okay, now I feel like it's time to actually do something. After inspecting the wall, after waiting on God, after praying for who knows how long, after letting God confirm and clarify this vision, look at what Nehemiah does next. Verse 17. Then, only after I'd done all this, then I said to them, and the them was the officials, the Jews, all the people living in Jerusalem. Then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins. And its gates have been burned with fire. Come and let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace. I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. And they replied, let us start rebuilding. And so they began this good work. So the first thing we saw was that the fragile seeds of vision require the fruitful soil of confirmation. But the second is this: cast your vision when the time is right. I mean, it's really simple. Cast your vision when the time is right. Because at some point, it's going to be time to go public. At some point, it's time to share your vision. At some point, it's time to actually let it out. And here's why the first part of this is so important. Here's why the waiting and the confirming and the clarifying process is so important. Because if you give God time and space to do that, there's a decent chance that he's doing that in other people's hearts as well. Because I can only imagine that when Nehemiah stood up and he shared this with the people, and we just have an abbreviated version. This is just a summary of the story. When he stood up and he shared this with the people, I can only imagine some of the people were like, you know what? We've been thinking the same thing, Nehemiah. We've been looking at these walls every single day, and for the last few weeks and for the last few months, we feel like God has been saying the same things to us. He's been showing us this need. He's been showing us what could be and what should be. And yet, we've just been waiting for someone to stand up and lead us. Yeah, let's do it. And I think that's the way visions often work. As you wait, and that's why that part is so important, as you wait and you allow God to confirm it and clarify, chances are he's maybe doing that in other people, so that when you finally go to your group of friends, when you finally go to your community, when you finally go to some other people and say, hey, here's what I think God has been stirring in my heart, there's a good chance they're going to look back and say, you know what? God's actually been stirring that in my heart too. Yeah, let's do this together. Now, maybe you're asking the question, well, how do you know when the time is right? Like, how do you know when it is time? How do you know you've waited long enough and it's time to actually kind of go public and share this vision and start doing something about it? Well, here's how you know. Let me give you four things. When you can answer these four questions crystal clear in your heart and your mind, you'll know the time is right. When you can address the problem, the solution, the reason, and the timing. Because that's what Nehemiah did. The problem, He said it was simple. You see the trouble we're in? Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. I mean, this is the part with your vision where you just stand up and say, hey, here's the problem that I see. Here's the need that I see. Here's the what is in light of what could be and should be. Second thing is the solution. For Nehemiah, it was simple. We need to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And for you, it can be simple as well. Hey, here's the problem and need I see, and here's the solution that I think will address it. Third thing is the reason. What's the reason behind all this? Like, what's really driving this? What's really compelling you to do something here? For Nehemiah, it was simple. He said, so that we won't be a disgrace anymore. So that we won't be a disgrace anymore. Now again, we're getting just a summary of what's going on. I wish we had like the text of his whole speech. He didn't just say these two sentences. This is just kind of an abridged version of what was going on. But I wish we had the whole text of his speech when he roused the people together, because I got to imagine he went through this long history of Israel. And he said, hey, Jerusalem used to be a place that showed God's glory to the whole world. Jerusalem used to be a place where people would come and they say, man, this place is amazing, the way it, not just the way it looks, but the way the people are and the way they worship and their character. Everything reflects this God that you worship. And I can almost imagine Nehemiah saying, hey, do you think we do that anymore? No. We're like a disgrace. And yet we know what God is up to in history, and we know that he wants to do something in this city and among this people to bring glory back to himself. And so let's be a part of what God is up to in history right now. That's the compelling reason for Nehemiah. And that can be the compelling reason for you and me. Where I say, hey, here's a problem I see. Here's a solution. But here's really the driving reason why I want to be about what God is up to in history, in Denver, in my neighborhood, in my school, in my workplace, in my family. I want to be about what God is doing right now. And here's how this vision fits into what God is doing. This is why we need to do this. And then the last thing is the timing. Nehemiah goes on to tell him why it's so important. We got to do this now. Why? Because God has given me the vision. Like, I can testify, I can tell you, I have had this vision. And then I went and I talked to the king. And the king of Persia went along with this, and he wants to help us. I mean, is there any more confirmation that now is the time that we need to all get together and start rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem? When you've done what Nehemiah did, you give time and space for God to clarify and confirm the vision. And you get to this point where it's almost like you can't hold it in any longer. And I got to imagine that's what it was for Nehemiah. I mean, when he first heard the news, remember, then he waited 4 months till he did anything in Persia. And then he took however long it took to plan a trip down to Jerusalem and then travel down to Jerusalem. And then he showed up there and he didn't do anything. He waited. He didn't tell anyone. And he walked the walls at night. And it's almost like he finally got to this point where he couldn't hold it in any longer. God had done all the confirming and clarifying, and he finally decided it's time to go public. And maybe that scares you. I mean, maybe you're here today and you say, well, I'm not a good public speaker. Well, you don't have to be. Moses wasn't a good public speaker. Moses stuttered and stammered and said to God, God, I can't talk very well. I'm not a good communicator in front of other people. And God said, you know what? You're going to lead a nation anyways. Maybe you say, well, I'm not extroverted. I'm not outgoing. I'm not a good salesperson. I can't get people excited about anything, you know? It doesn't matter. If God has given you a vision, and he's prepared you specifically for it, and he's picked you out, and he's brought you to that point, then at some point, you're going to have to trust him. And at some point, you're going to have to recognize, I can't do this on my own. I need to get other people involved in this. And in that moment, you're going to have to trust him and begin to cast a vision to other people. I thought it would be fun to close today by showing you an example of somebody casting a compelling vision. I want to show you in a second a clip from a movie called Gettysburg. It's a Civil War movie about the famous battle there. And in this clip, there's this man, the actor plays a man named Colonel Joshua Chamberlain, who won the Medal of Honor at Gettysburg. And this clip comes from before the battle, so they kind of know this battle is coming, but they're not sure what it's going to look like. And he's a northern general for the Union, and there's some soldiers that have deserted. Some soldiers that were fighting for the North, and they'd grown so tired and weary of war, they just put their weapons down and they just wanted to go home. They didn't want to be a part of war anymore. And they had been caught, and so Colonel Chamberlain has to do something with these deserters, and he gives them a little speech. So take a look.
Men, gather around.
I've been talking with Private Buckland. He's told me about your problem. There's nothing I can do today. We're moving out in a few minutes. We'll be moving all day. I've been ordered to take you men with me. I'm told that that if you don't come, I can shoot you. Well, you know I won't do that. Maybe somebody else will, but I won't. So, that's that. Here's the situation. The whole Reb Army is up that road a ways waiting for us, so this is no time for an argument like this. I tell you, we could surely use you fellas. We're now well below half strength. Whether you fight or not, that's up to you. Whether you come along is well, you're coming. You know who we are, what we're doing here, but if you're going to fight alongside us, there's a few things I want you to know. This regiment was formed last summer in Maine. There were 1,000 of us then. There are less than 300 of us now. All of us volunteered to fight for the Union, just as you did. Some came mainly because we were bored at home. Thought this looked like it might be fun. Some came because we were ashamed not to. Many of us came because it was the right thing to do. And all of us have seen men die. This is a different kind of army. If you look back through history, you will see men fighting for pay, for women, for some other kind of loot. They fight for land, power, because a king leads them, or just because they like killing. We are here for something new. This has not happened much in the history of the world. We are an army out to set other men free. America should be free ground. All of it. Not divided by a line between slave state and free. All the way from here to the Pacific Ocean. No man has to bow. No man born to royalty. Here we judge you by what you do, not by who your father was. Here you can be something. Here is the place to build a home. But it's not the land. There's always more land. It's the idea that we all have value. You and me. What we're fighting for, in the end, we're fighting for each other. Go ahead. You talk for a while. If you choose to join us, you want your muskets back, you can have them. Nothing more will be said by anybody anywhere. If you choose not to join us, well, you can come along under guard, and when this is all over, I will do what I can to see you get a fair treatment, but for now, we're moving out. Gentlemen, I think if we lose this fight, we lose the war. So if you choose to join us, I'll be personally very grateful.
I don't think it's exaggerating to say that we too are in a war. And that God has called us to be a part of helping him set men and women free. And I watch a clip like that and I think, do I believe like in anything that deeply? Like, do I believe in anything that passionately? Do I believe that people today are just as enslaved in different ways? That they're enslaved to their addictions, they're enslaved to their family situations, they're enslaved to depression, to loneliness, to hopelessness. People are enslaved to their stubbornness, to their pride, to their money, whatever it is. We've all been there. Do I believe so deeply that really the only answer is something I've found, and it's Jesus. And that the only person that can give them freedom and give them liberation, the only person that can really provide hope and redemption and restoration in this whole world is Jesus. And do I believe in that so much, enough to get past my own weekends and my own stuff and my own job and my own money and my own concerns and start asking him, God, would you give me your concerns? Would you help me have your heart? And do I believe in him so much that I think he's actually called me to be a part of what he's doing? And that he's got huge visions in my life to be a part of what he's doing. And he wants to birth that in me. I pray that we would be a group of people who trust God enough to birth those visions in us, who gives him the time and space to confirm and clarify those things and wait on him. But when the time is right, we would pray, God, please give me the boldness to stand up and cast your vision and begin to do the good work you've called me to do. Let me pray. God, I really believe that the stakes are just as high for each one of us. And I really believe it can be so exciting and fulfilling to be a part of what you've called us to do. And I really believe that you're doing something amazing around us today in this city, in this church, in this group of people. And so God, as we've been praying, continue to open our eyes. Continue to show us what that is and continue to give us the ability to trust you with it. We just want to be a part of what you're up to. Help us to trust you. Just take a step of faith and do that. Pray this in your name. Amen.